I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a comic book podcast, the official comic book podcast of King's Comics in Sydney. My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
We are reunited at last.
I know, it's been a while.
It's actually been only 1 week because we did.
I just feel like I haven't talked about comics enough.
Sure.
It is my day job, but also not as extensively as I normally would have.
It's been 2 weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
We took one week away from each other. 1 week break from each other, and it was glorious, I guess.
So necessary.
Instead, I hung out with aging pop acts, I guess 12 90s pop stars days is the equivalent of Siobhan.
So,
but it's good to be back here. I had a lot of funny moments of pop stars catching me reading comics and responding in different weird and wonderful ways.
What did S Club 3 think of your reading comics?
S Club, Bradley from S Club was actually one of the most chill about it.
Oh, really?
he said how much he likes comics and really enjoys. He's a massive Transformers comics fan.
Oh, so what a nerd!
Chill out. Ain't no party like an S Club party. But Kerry Katona from Atomic Kitten.
Oh my god, was Kerry Katona actually on that tour?
Yeah, you bet.
Wow,
she was a character.
Yeah, and she seems like a character.
And the all I'll say is that she was the least impressed with me reading comic books. She looked at me and she goes, "Oh, you're just a big kid, ain't you?" Yeah.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Looking at you, that is correct.
I will say, though, the weirdest ones, though, because there's a lot of flying when you go on tour.
Mm.
And so when I fly, I will take a big stack of comics,
yeah,
and then I will take my iPad, which has an infinite number of comics on it, and then I'll have my laptop, which has movies on it as well, and then I'll have my Nintendo 3DS with about 200 games on that. So, like, provided I have a power source at all times, I'm good for, like, 2 years.
Yeah, you're prepared.
I'm ready to go.
You're ready for that landing on a desert island.
That happens to have power source, just no internet. The majority of people on this tour... Oh, and of course, I got my phone with headphones and music. The majority of people on this tour didn't even have headphones.
What?
They just like Robbie from E17, who sat next to me on almost every flight, goes, "Oh, you're reading another one of those, are you?" And I'm like, yeah, because there was a flight yesterday and now we're on a different flight today. So I brought two things at least. And he just didn't bring anything and he just kind of sat with his arms crossed and looked at what I was doing.
That's so weird.
That is all the criticism that you'll get of those acts from me, though. Let's talk about some comic books.
Yes, please.
Every week, Siobhan and I read all the comics. We try to read them all. Sometimes we don't get our comics until yesterday, and we try and binge them all on a warm park bench in Sydney's western suburbs. That's what I did. Siobhan managed to get through way more comics than me for once.
I know, right? I had a very relaxing weekend.
What we do in this show is we have a little segment called First Things First, in which we read all the brand new number ones. Let's kick things off with all the number ones from last week. I've got four. Is that how many you've got, Siobhan?
Yeah.
Great. Absolutely. So we read the same amount of number ones. DC had two new number ones. Three new number ones. Holy moly.
It was such a good week for DC. This was genuinely a week where I struggled to get through all of the Marvel comics and was like so excited to read everything DC, which I feel like hasn't happened in a little while.
Sure.
Anyway.
So we'll kick off with the DC number ones. We'll talk about Batwoman Rebirth number one first. This was written by Marguerite Bennett and James Tynion IV, with art by Steve Epting on pencils and inks, and colors were by somebody else whose name is somewhere within this comic book.
Their last name is Cox.
Jeremy Cox on colors. So there you go. The Epting art, first and foremost, my favorite thing about the book.
Really beautiful. Such a perfect choice for this book.
An unexpected choice as well.
Yeah. I feel like he hasn't done a mainstream superhero book in a little while. Am I crazy? Maybe.
He did those issues of Doctor Strange. Very recently.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, I think he's I think he makes total sense for this book. You know, like he does things like Velvet with
not Doctor Strange, Mighty Thor.
Right. That's still a good pick. Yeah. You know, like he excels at doing really good characterization for sort of strong, fighty female characters.
Yes, that makes sense. Definitely.
And I think he was a really good choice to bring a really rounded version of Kate Kane to this book.
From an art point of view or a writing point of view?
I mean, both. Like, I mean, I think it's hard always to say where the line is between writer and artist, but I think he does a really good job at, you know, showing all these different sides to her visually.
Yes, for sure.
As, because this follows Kate throughout her sort of history. We get to know, like, there's all this stuff about her that I, like, sort of secret history almost that I wish they would go more into. And they also do that thing that I love in a first issue where they really foreshadow stuff to come.
Yep.
So, I really enjoyed this.
So, have you read the Batwoman run that Greg Rucka and... is it James Williams III?
J.H. Williams.
James Williams III. Yeah.
That's an all-time classic, I think.
And I feel like even now, whenever you do get a Batwoman book, you have the artist, even if it's someone of the caliber of Steve Epting, paying homage to the layouts of that
absolutely.
Run.
Absolutely.
J.H. Williams III obviously has his signature kind of crazy jumping out layouts that are...
Yeah, really inventive panel structure, you know, using the bat shape a lot in the actual way that the story is told.
So we see this is a rebirth issue, so it's a zero issue where you just kind of meet the character, and we see her at different times in her life at age 9, age 20, age 23, age 27, and in the future. So she's currently 27, so that's when she's Batwoman.
Man, I still have 1 year before I can be Batwoman. 1 year left and... Sorry.
I'm way past my prime. In a way, I was Batwoman at 27.
Yeah. Weren't we all?
That was before the podcast, so there's no recorded history of me being born, but I was, trust me. So at age 9, in Kate Kane's life, her mother and her daughter, sorry, her mother and her sister, her twin sister, were killed by someone who was trying to get at her father.
Or were they?
Yeah.
if you've read the Greg Rucka, J.H. Williams run, you know that.
Oh, of course, that's right. That is his sister, isn't it? That weird Alice in Wonderland referencing character who appears in this too.
Absolutely.
And of course, she goes on to follow her father's footsteps and enters the military, but is booted from the military when she comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Or she's kind of caught with someone else in her corps.
In a romantic situation.
She comes out to her superior in that, and she kind of gets booted. And so she becomes a vigilante and is quickly discovered by her cousin, Bruce Wayne, a.k.a. Batman. And then they become pals, kind of.
Kind of.
That's more or less what we see here, but we also see some incredible stuff that might be happening in the future. Apparently, at some point, she's going to lead an attack on Gotham, which is very exciting. I think this may have been the best Rebirth issue yet.
Yeah, this was a really solid first issue. I really enjoyed this.
But I mean, I feel like, you know, the story hasn't really started yet. But I didn't like this. Wasn't pointless.
No, totally. All this sort of history of her, like, you know, various loves throughout her life, various sort of missions that she's been on, places that she's been, was all new to me and really compelling and engaging. And I would love, like, a, you know, history of Batwoman character book almost to go alongside this. But all the stuff that they've kind of shadowed for the next couple of arcs, I assume, look great. Like, we see a former love returning for what looks like revenge, and we see her sister.
Is the former love? Is that Renee Montoya?
No, that's Tahini, whoever that is.
Oh, I mean Tahani. But no, and then there's is that Renee on top of her there?
I kind of assumed it was the same person, but it could be Renee. I would love it if it was Renee
because Renee is in this Rebirth issue. which is great. Renee Montoya, probably one of my top five DC characters of all time.
But yeah, we also see she probably goes up against Scarecrow, it looks like, I assume.
Yes.
And we see the return of her very, very creepy twin sister.
Who only talks in lowercase. yeah, this was an excellent rebirth issue. If you were a fan of the character or you are looking to take on a new DC book, I would 100% recommend you pick up this book. And obviously we're going to be following it very closely. I'm not sure if James Tynion the IV is staying on as co-writer for the entire series.
Yeah, I don't know.
But this was probably the Marguerite Bennett book since Animosity number one that I enjoyed the most.
Absolutely agreed.
If you want to see, I mean, Siobhan was talking about, like, you know, an earlier, you know, Batwoman's early years. We kind of got that in the last two issues of Detective, which Marguerite Bennett and James Tynion the IV wrote together too. That's definitely worth checking out if you want something to go alongside this. Cool. So that was a real swing and what's the good thing? Home run.
Yeah.
That's the good thing
you
in baseball.
Sports.
So now we move on to another. I'm gonna say this from the get-go. Home run again.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a great week for DC number ones. DC Universe Rebirth presents Super Sons number one, written by Peter Tomasi, who has been writing the Superman run that we've enjoyed so much since it started during DC Rebirth, and with art by sometime Superman artist Jorge Jimenez. This is the team-up book between two very polarizing DC characters, and they are polarizing because they are brats. They are Jonathan Kent, a.k.a. Superboy, and Damian Wayne, a.k.a. Robin.
Current Robin.
This Robin.
Bruce Wayne's biological son.
So they basically, it's all about them sneaking around from their parents, their dads, and getting up to some mischief. Superboy is trying to, like, fit in at school and stop bullies without killing them by using his powers.
Such classic Superboy stuff.
Love it. It was done so well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's so perfect.
Yeah.
They did such a solid job of it because I think that John Kent kind of really has that same spirit as the child Clark, where he's, you know, really wants to help people and really wants to be a good guy and wants to use his powers and can be a little bit impetuous, but also has that strong moral center of his parents, like, guiding him from what to do. And I sort of love that Damian Wayne is there. And it's kind of funny because Damian doesn't seem to like him, but he clearly does because
so
he
much.
Keeps showing up and trying to be friends with him in a sort of the most Damian way ever.
A lot of people don't like Damian because he is just a dick.
Oh, but that's why he's
And that's
great.
Why I like. I think, yeah. But I think in particular, his character works so well in this because he's so mismatched with John Kent.
Absolutely.
But you can tell the two really look up to each other, really want to prove themselves to each other.
Yeah.
And, they've both got so much to prove. And I think, I don't know, if you're on the fence about Damian, I really think this book would hopefully convince you that he is a compelling enough character to warrant the level of fandom that he has.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, you need Damian there to make John act out a little bit. You know, he kind of is that.
You can't
Yang
be too good.
To his
yeah,
Yang,
exactly.
You know, it's I think this is such a perfect book, and the art's so great and so fun. And Alfred's funny, and the home life for both of the characters is so, you know, perfect and so well done. Just heaps of fun.
And one of the big things, you know, we've been reading all of the Superman books for the most part over at Rebirth, and one of the big things that hasn't really happened yet is the greater kind of Superman family finding out about John Kent. So, you know, for instance, Lex Luthor doesn't know yet, but at the end we see Lex Luthor as they try and break into LexCorp. We see Lex Luthor there. I thought this was just awesome, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where this book goes. I think it could be a lot of fun, and it's, you know, it's great for young readers, and it's just great for anyone that's a fan of
Superman. Literally everyone at King's, like, Lynn was so excited about this book, but we all were, like, Lynn and Jim equally loved this book. It was the one that we were probably all most excited about when Rebirth was announced, and it totally lived up to all of our expectations.
And it's a, you know, it's a book about kids that isn't annoying.
Yeah, and it's just fun. Like, it sort of harkens back to a time when superhero comics were fun, and it's about, like, having adventures with your friends, and I loved this. So good, guys.
Fantastic. So those are the two DC Universe Rebirth books that came out number one this week. We have one more book from DC this week that was number one, and it is The Wildstorm. And this is Warren Ellis, wow, with John Davis Hunt on art and Ivan Placencia on colors. Basically, this is them reinventing the Wildstorm universe. For those who don't know, the Wildstorm universe was invented by Jim Lee in the 90s, and mm-hmm. it's like an alternate kind of superhero universe that ended up getting bought by DC, and DC integrated that universe into their own after the Flashpoint event, and so when the New 52 started, all the Wildstorm characters who had their own very rich and multi-issued universe were just integrated into the regular DC universe, which I think was one of the many mistakes of DC's New 52. To hear the rest of the mistakes, just listen to any podcast that came out during the New 52 that was talking about comics. The Wildstorm... Look, my interactions with the Wildstorm universe are pretty small.
I've not read any Wildstorm.
I've read the Warren Ellis and Mark Millar runs on The Authority,
mm-hmm.
Which is where we got the character of Midnighter from, mm-hmm. and Apollo, and who are currently actually used quite well in the DC universe, a rarity. I've also read what's the other one that Warren Ellis did? They meet up with Batman. I want Planetary.
Right.
Planetary is really good. But aside from that, those two, I've not read too many things. I know there's Stormwatch. I know that there's Wildcats.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many like beloved 90s relics that people, you know, hold so close to their hearts from Wildstorm universe. And so this is a 24-issue series that Warren Ellis is doing that kind of recreates the Wildstorm universe as its own thing, separate from the DC universe. And I enjoyed it a lot. Even though I had very limited knowledge, I certainly didn't recognize any of the characters in front of me beyond like their costumes.
Yeah, I mean, I barely like the only character that I think I have a sort of visual knowledge of is Grifter, and I don't think he showed up in this yet, unless
no, I don't think so either.
We saw him sans sort of handkerchief mask.
You don't know Voodoo?
Oh, I know of Voodoo.
Sure,
but this was a much better version of Voodoo than I've seen before because
that New 52 series also
she
a mistake.
Wasn't a stripper. I loved this. I thought this was so, like, this was such a solid first issue. It's very, very Warren Ellis.
Like
the, you know, the, most of the characters read of a certain level of, like, curmudgeonly sassiness, kind of,
yeah,
which
was,
I enjoyed.
When Nick Mason was on last, we talked about Warren Ellis having a habit of writing himself into the book as at least one character. I feel like every single character in this book is Warren Ellis.
But they're all facets of Warren Ellis.
Sure.
You know? Like, I'm going to be terrible because I can't remember anyone's names, but the woman who sort of turns into a robot character, I thought that was like...
Is it Angela? Is that her
incredibly
name?
Incredibly... Angela? Is that right?
Maybe, yeah. I don't even... Was it right? Lynn?
Angie?
Yeah,
whatever.
They're pretty similar names, Lynn. Well, I don't know why you would call us up on that.
God. But like that's such a compelling character and so well done, and she was so sort of scatty-brained and...
Yes.
Scatterbrained. Yeah.
Big difference between those two words.
Right, sorry. But I love this. I love like the sort of evil corporations being set up and the sort of corporate intrigue at the heart of the story. I thought this was really cool.
Bizarre tech industry stuff going on as well.
Yep.
There's a lot to take in this issue. It's fairly fast paced. It's very wordy. It's very Warren Ellis-y, but I happen to like most of those things, so I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. I thought this was a really solid intro. If you don't know the Wildstorm universe, maybe if you do know the Wildstorm universe a little bit better, you might have more of a problem with it.
Certainly isn't the...
You
know, classic 90s archetype of a, you know, punchy comic.
Yeah, absolutely. My boyfriend, who loves the original Wildstorm comics, did not enjoy this. And I think that's exactly why. But, you know, like, it's updated for now. 90s comics are,
well,
in
I mean,
some level,
this definitely, I mean, it was written by the same writer, but this definitely fits with the Wildstorm universe that I know from, you know, The Authority and Planetary stuff. It feels a lot very much in line with that, so... look, who knows who's going to be introduced in this universe? We know Grifter is coming up because he's in all the promo material. I don't know shit about Grifter. He just like wears like a sack on his head.
Yeah,
right?
That's pretty much it.
That's it. That's all his material power.
And the art by John Davis Hunt is extremely good.
Man, so he does the clean room, really well. Right?
That's where I know him from.
Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to figure it out. Yes, he does.
His art is sensational. Is it as good in that?
Yes, but weirder.
Weirder, right? Sure.
That's a much like weirder title. Yeah. I mean, this could get very weird.
And this is,
I assume it will.
This is going to be standalone. Basically, Warren Ellis's plan is to introduce one more Wildstorm book a year, I think. Maybe two.
Cool. I like that.
Holy shit. Look at this ad for a biker Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Wonder Woman already has a sexy biker outfit. and it's one of my all-time favorite Wonder Woman costumes.
Is it as sexy as this faux Iron Man thing she's wearing?
Nah, it's like she's wearing like little black cutoffs and like a little black strappy bra and a motorcycle jacket. Everyone hates it, but I love it.
Who's your favorite motorcycle variant superhero heroine? Let us know.
Serious issues at kingscomics.com. This is like a series of statues that they've done. They're called like the Gotham Garage or whatever.
We've right.
already had the Catwoman in. Wonder Woman's the next one.
Yikes. Yeah. Who are these for? Let us know. Serious issues at kingscomics.com. Our next number one. By the way, these so far, you know, for two people that read too many comics as is, we've just completely okayed three series that we're absolutely going to read every issue
of. Yeah, absolutely.
So, good luck to us in the future.
Damn it, DC.
Over to Marvel right now, and a one-shot, which is great because that means there can be no more after this.
Yay.
This is the, they've been doing the .mu issues, which is the tie-ins to the Monsters Unleashed event that's going on right now. We're going to review issue 3 of that later in the episode. This is Doctor Strange .mu. One.mu, and where Doctor Strange is usually written by one of our favorite writers, Jason Aaron. This one is written by another one of our favorite writers, Chip Zdarsky. This is a big Chip week, everybody. We got three Chip books to be reviewed on this one.
There was a comic book store in the States that was offering a Chip special, which was three Chip Zdarsky comic books for the price of three comic books.
That's great. Art on this one is by Julian Lopez and Scott Hanna and Frank Diamata. This was... Like, the other two Chip books that we're going to review later in this episode are extremely funny, but this was just, like, you know, high fun adventure, a really great handle on Doctor Strange that was completely in line with Jason Aaron's version of it.
I think this was actually a much more classic, serious version of Doctor Strange than I think we see in the Jason Aaron book.
I was going to go on to say that. Like, it was, like, in line with what he's doing, but also felt like Chip's own... take
Absolutely.
On the character.
Yeah, and it's cool to see him doing something less comedy-based and to show he has a really good grasp of, like, serious characters as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. We do love those serious issues. So this is a team-up between Doctor Strange and Googum.
Son of Goog.
Goom. Who is a Kirby creation, I'm sure. He looks like a Kirby creation.
Yeah.
He's a red blob with big frog eyes.
And
he appears in Monsters Unleashed this week. All the Kirby monsters kind of go up head to head against all of the generic yelling monsters in that book. Can't wait to talk about that in depth.
Oh yeah, goodness.
This was infinitely better in every single way. I really enjoyed this fun team up. It kind of shows Doctor Strange, you know, struggling with the limited magical resources that he has. But, you know, he also has just enough to go up against even the biggest of monsters, even if it means making himself as big as that monster, which is exactly what he does in this.
Absolutely. And I think one of the really fun things that we see in this is because Chip Zdarsky has just been announced as writing a Spider-Man book, which is, like, insanely perfect. That's such a great call. And Spider-Man shows up in this and they have a little bit of a sort of team up and a couple of back and forths, and he's so clearly perfect to write a funny, quippy version of Peter Parker.
Well, you make Peter Parker and Spider-Man good by, like, yeah, he's confident and quippy, but it's a defense mechanism.
Yes.
So, like, he's, like, always, you've always got to make him self-depreciating, and, like, he can't actually be funny. Like, you can find the things he's saying funny because they're, like, either inappropriate or so dumb, but he's not a good quipper.
And I think
Zdarsky has such a great grasp of him in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm like, that just as a little taste test of what we're going to get from a Spider-Man book was very exciting.
He wrote Spider-Man excellently in Howard the Duck too.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I feel like everyone after reading this now wants a Googum solo series because that was such a fun, hilarious character as this sort of... and even like in the Monsters Unleashed book, we see him as this character who's trying to prove himself to his monster dad. It's pretty funny.
Lots of good stuff there. Definitely worth picking up this one. I haven't read any of the other Monsters Unleashed ones that I enjoyed anywhere near as much as this. So, this is a great one.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is our segment called First Things First. And now we move on to the rest of the comics that came out this week. But before we do that, we have to play an incredibly beloved segment. It's called Flip a Coin for Marvel or DC. And it requires me to have a coin. And I don't think I have a coin. So, Siobhan, can I borrow a coin?
Hang on, let me see if I've got a coin. Such professionals. We're so prepared for the one segment that we
people,
have to
that
do.
People write in about every week. All right, cool. So currently today we're playing with a 2008 edition Australian 20-cent piece.
It's got a platypus on it, guys.
That it does. And ripples.
Coolest Australian animal of all time.
So let's say, is DC heads or tails, Siobhan?
DC is heads.
And heads it is.
Hey, all
right. DC first. I read a couple of DC books this week. Looks like you read a few more. Yeah, keep in mind that I got through most of the books this week, but there are going to be a few unfortunate holes in my reading that I think Siobhan will have covered.
Few.
So I'll just have to be the ones like, uh-huh, that's right. Yep. So
I agree.
Let's kick things off with Batman, number 17. I Am Bane, part 2, in which Bane enlists his revenge on everybody who helps Batman steal Psycho Pirate from him and break his back. And he's recovered just as quickly as Batman recovers from his
broken. Like, look, breaking your back is no big deal in this day and
not
age.
Not anymore. It used to be.
Yeah, you're up and moving in a couple of days.
It used to take 12 issues to fix your back. But now
you used to have to get a whole new Batman in for a little while.
This is really fun.
Mm.
I think if I think about it too much, I don't like it.
I know exactly what you mean. Like, things in that at the time I was like, that's cool or interesting or weird. And now looking back, I'm like, is that cool and interesting and weird? Like, there's a scene where Alfred breaks into Arkham with
a Jeremiah Arkham facial mask.
Yes. And what's a Gotham Girl.
Dressed up as Hush.
Yeah, which is not a hard costume to do, let's face it. And they go in to Psycho Pirate's cell and they are threatening Psycho Pirate. Alfred is threatening Psycho Pirate with a gun to try and cure Gotham Girl in what seems like perhaps not the best way ever. Like, just by going, tell her that she's very brave. It seems flimsy to me, guys. I feel like it could go wrong.
I do like a ballsy Alfred, though, even if he is holding a gun. I love that he generally always seems to have access to a gun. Like, Batman hates guns unless Alfred has it.
Yeah. that actually seems like an okay rule, to be honest.
So we know that Bane's already taken out the Robins, but even though we saw them hanging by nooses at the end of the last issue,
that's not addressed at all.
Yeah, well, they're in like stasis chambers in Superman's Fortress of Solitude. Then we just kind of like everyone else that was either involved or close to Batman is being taken out by Bane and his weird cronies. One of them has like a bird.
Yeah, look, I mean, who are these bros? No one knows. But they look suitably hilarious.
Yeah.
I think that one of the real strengths of this book is that Tom King writes a really good Commissioner Gordon.
Yes.
It's a very classic Commissioner Gordon on the phone to his wife being like, baby, I'm going to quit smoking any day now. But while all the while smoking a pipe.
Also, it's not his wife. He's talking to Barbara.
Is his wife not also called Barbara?
What?
Am I crazy? His last name is Barbara. But yeah, thank you.
Is that a thing?
This is the thing. I have no idea where in continuity his marital status is, but Commissioner Gordon's wife is called Barbara. It's weird as hell. Look, because it's... Yeah.
Oh, well, he didn't say James, so it's definitely not James.
But I assumed he was talking to his wife there.
Okay.
Anyway. Who knows?
How come I've never picked up on that? Is it like when you...
Yeah, you must have read some books in a really weird way.
Doesn't he marry Sarah Essen?
I don't know. See, like, I don't know which one. This is not the right time for this conversation, but I don't know.
I'm pretty sure a comic book podcast is the right time for this conversation.
I don't know which one is Barb, like, Batgirl's mum, but I thought he remarried a woman called Barbara, which is weird on a couple of levels.
So many couple of levels.
But anyway, I'm pretty sure this is Barbara's wife.
Okay. Whatever. All right.
Shut up. And this ends like Tom King is very good at like sort of cinematic kind of storytelling. Like the way Bane is introduced at the end is pretty cool, and the pacing of that is very clever, and the way it all looks and the way it's all set up for their kind of big fight is pretty cool.
Definitely, and this felt like the Finchiest issue yet, and I was not unokay with it.
Yeah, I was not mad.
I was fine with it.
Not mad.
So yeah, look,
mostly
because
the
Jordie
Blair colours are beautiful.
Oh, they are very good. I'm like, you know, I'm still pretty engaged in this story. I think Tom King's Batman Run is one of the most surprising things that comes out each fortnight.
Yeah.
You don't know what vibe you're going to get at all.
Absolutely, it's very confusing.
We had like a classic like weird bat parody sitcom last issue, and now we've got this like relentless takedown issue. Good
but
fun.
I thought there were a couple of good elements. Like I think there's a good element of Batman and Superman, like this Batman and Superman learning to trust each other a little bit.
Yep.
I don't know if this is going to be the end of Bronze Tiger, but I thought that was pretty well done. Like,
no, he's one of the guys at the end on that's being held hostage. So
right,
doesn't
okay.
look like he's dead, but he looks. Yeah, he takes a must have been buckshot or something to the chest.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And there's some good Duke moments as well.
Yeah, definitely. So
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, I did too.
Think.
Good for you, Tom King. Good for you, Batman. Superman issue 17 this week by the aforementioned Pete DeMarcy, Patrick Gleason, and a new artist on this one shot, Sebastian Fiammara, with notable colors by Dark Horse alumni Dave Stewart.
Lovely.
And Pete DeMarcy works with Dave Stewart in his various creator-owned things over at Dark Horse, and this was definitely a horror comic, which is probably within his wheelhouse. It's a one shot about. Basically set on the farm, the neighbor of the Kents, who is good friends with John, she's a little girl. She asks John to come and help her find a cow and potentially her grandpa who have been lost in the swamp.
Oh no.
And it's called Dead Man Swamp.
Only in Kansas.
And they breathe in some weird gases from the bog and they start hallucinating all kinds of crazy shit. It feels very real. It's very horror. It's beautifully, like the art of this is fantastic.
Yeah.
But do you think it was all in their minds or not, Siobhan?
No. There's you can't have mutual hallucinations like that, right?
I don't know.
It would surely be some kind of weird, there's got to be a weird spooky swamp somewhere around there. And I'm into that. If that comes back in some way in the future.
And involves
Superman
swamp
book,
thing?
Well, I don't know. Maybe there was a big creepy man shape or something. So who knows what that is. But, yeah, I like this.
Me too.
I sort of sped through it pretty quick. Like, I sort of didn't realize that it was a one shot, and then the end, I was like, oh, that was all wrapped up very neatly.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the pacing could have maybe been like 1% better. But other than that, like, this was a really solid, really fun situation.
Yeah, it was like a complete take on like, you know, 80s family horror. Even had, you know, flashbacks to, you know, how Stranger Things tackled that with like the kids on the bikes driving into the darkness, driving their bikes. That's how it works. So yeah, another a great episode issue of Superman. It was good to have something a lot more grounded, even though it dealt in like hallucinations and stuff, than the crazy multiverse issues that we had. He can do it all, baby.
And it was just a straight John Kent. We really didn't see Superman at all.
Again, pretty fun. Yeah, definitely.
I enjoyed.
He's everywhere, man. We don't need him all the time.
Absolutely.
I didn't read Nightwing this week. Did you?
I did. This was like a romance issue, just in time for Valentine's Day, guys. So this was pretty much all about, we see the development of Nightwing and Defacer, although she's not Defacer anymore, Sean Tsang, whatever her name is, their relationship developing as they sort of learn how to be in a couple. And, you know, I'm really taking this one seriously, guys. I think that she might be the one. So obviously, by the end of it, she is potentially fridged.
Oh, boy.
Where she has been kidnapped by someone. Someone comes, attacks her from behind while she is painting, because she's gone back into painting, guys. Now she's unemployed. She's had a lot of time for painting, and rent is apparently really cheap in Bloodhaven, so that seems really relatable. But yeah, just at the end, like the last page is a panel of Nightwing going, "I love her," talking to Bruce and Alfred, and the panel underneath is her being attacked.
But wait, what about Barbara?
Oh yeah, there's a whole bit where he sort of tells Barbara that
we're talking about Commissioner Gordon's wife, right?
Yes, Commissioner Gordon's wife. No. Batgirl comes to Bloodhaven, and they have a chat about him going, you know, I've found a place where I belong, and I think I found a person where I belong as well. And Batgirl's like, but it's not me. He's like, no. So that's like yeah,
are you a shipper? Do you like those two together?
Yeah.
Dick and Barbara.
I mean, I don't really.
Justice for Barbara.
I like who do I like best? With
Nightwing.
Dick and Starfire. That's always a fun team up.
Does he get around as much as Daredevil does?
He gets around Tons.
Really?
Yeah.
Keep listing. Keep going. Who else?
I can't think of anyone else.
That's all.
But I'm sure he did. But yeah, like this was a very cutesy. The art by Minkyu Jung, really, really suited it. It has that kind of cute anime almost tone to it. And I thought this was, yeah, just really, really good fun.
Great.
Except I hope that they don't just kill her off in the end, because that would be boring and annoying and dumb.
I feel like we're past that, right?
Yeah,
we're
come on, guys. That. And I genuinely do expect more of Tim Seeley. He's a really solid writer and he writes good female characters. And I think it would be a really weak move if they just did that for some character development for Nightwing. And also, like, introduce a new character in one arc and then get rid of her again. Like, come on. Come on, fellas.
Yep.
Anyway.
So I didn't read any of the Young on Animal stuff this week, but before you review those, I did read one Vertigo book.
Nice.
And it is Unfollow by Rob Williams and art by, is it Michael Dowling? Someone Dowling. Michael Dowling is either the artist of this book or one of my friends, one of my mum's family friends' husbands.
Nice.
So shouts to Michael
Maybe
Dowling.
Both.
Yeah. Wow. That would be good, wouldn't
that
it?
That would be huge.
Mike Dowling.
There you go.
That's who it is. Colors by Quentin Winter. This is... a series that I've loved. It's issue 16 of Unfollow. It's a very fun thriller about 140 characters who get chosen over Chirpa, which is this universe's version of Twitter, to inherit this old guy's millions. And as each of them die, they inherit more and more. But I don't know why. Maybe sales were low or something, or maybe this was the plan all along. But I'm pretty sure they've announced the end of this. You know, sooner than it was meant to.
Oh.
I really thought it was going to be a nice, big, long, like, this easily would have sustained my interest for 60 issues.
Mm.
So, something happens, a heap of characters just kind of die off screen in between issues, and now we're kind of pushing forward towards the end. And there are moments where you catch up with the characters that look completely different now. They've got beards, they've cut their hair, and they're like, you know, they've done some terrible things in the issues that we've missed. But because we didn't see them, it just, like, you know, their reactions to them, like, and the accusations of what different people there are now, it just doesn't feel as powerful as it should.
Mm.
That said, there's some really cool stuff going on with kind of like the bigger tech corporation world that the dead millionaire was a part of. And this issue ends with him turning off the internet.
Oh, goodness. Good move. Good call.
I support
that.
And then there's enough of the weird, semi-spiritual stuff in here as well. Like, it's still a really, really good series. I just, you know, like all good series, I wish it was as long as it was always meant to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over to you, Young Animal reporter.
Thank you. So I did read both Young Animal titles this week. So first up, Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye. This comic just keeps getting better, I feel, issue by issue, as we sort of find out more about the underground people and their city and this sort of mysterious icky fungus bad guy who appears to be someone who we thought had passed away or had retired or was out of the biz, but is back in icky fungus form. And we see betrayals and we learn more about sort of Cave's family and his daughter. And there's a really excellent scene where, you know, Cave is like, okay, we're really screwed here. Like, they are being attacked by this whole crew of terrifying underground monsters. And Cave's like, all right, okay, this has gotten, we're in over our heads now. I know what to do. I'm going to call Superman. And everyone's like, well, you know, Superman. He's like, yeah, we go way back. It's all good. I'm just going to call Superman. And then the number that he has is obviously for the previous Superman and is no longer working. And so they're just stuck under there and totally screwed.
It's so crazy that this actually is part of the greater DC universe.
Yeah. And it's so clever and it works so well. And like, I love that these comics just are there to inhabit just the weirder pockets of the DC universe. So, you know, this ends with a really nice cliffhanger of they're in a really desperate situation and we don't know how they're going to get out of it, but I am keen to see how they do it. And like, Michael Avon Oeming's art is so, so perfect for this. Like, awesome. It just works so well. And it just keeps getting trippier and weirder. And yeah, I love it. I think this is really cool. And the little background backup material was the weirdest one so far. This one, like, didn't make much sense to me, but I still really enjoyed reading. So yeah, definitely pick this one up, guys.
Is that your second favorite young animal book? Because we all know Shade the Changing Girl is at number one.
Shade Changing Girl is number one. Cave Carson has a cybernetic eye. And then I find it hard to pick between Doom Patrol and Mother Panic, which I know you don't enjoy heaps, but I thought this was a really solid issue.
I'm going to read them both of these issues tonight. Have no fear, dear listeners.
Excellent. So issue 3 of Mother Panic was also out this week. I like this because it is a bit like kind of groping around in the dark for details. In this, we find out way more about our lead character, whose name I've obviously forgotten. And we see sort of her childhood and how she was shipped away to a boarding school after her father died because her brother blamed her for her father's death in a really sort of horrifying way. She has a cool little encounter with Batwoman, which could be a fun little continuing sort of tension, which I really enjoyed. We see her sort of go up against some kind of mysterious evil bad lady, and she saves a bunch of kids. But just like I like this as almost a darker portion of the sort of Batverse. You know, I think it fits in really nicely. It works really well, and the backup story about Gotham Radio, which is, you know, great art by Phil Hester and written by Jim Kruger, and is incredibly sort of. Feels very prescient for this time of, like, shock jocks being given mainstream appeal of this. And it's a story about this kind of shock jock who's wearing an American flag bandana and wants to bring down the bat and getting... He's sort of being given airtime on Gotham Radio because he's really popular and so they have to go where the trends are. And everyone hates him and he's a total asshole to everyone. And they manage to tell that story, which is quite complicated, in like 4 pages really well and really efficiently.
Awesome.
And yeah, just the young animal books are a real highlight for me always. Excellent. So I highly recommend both of those.
Those are our DC reviews. Now we move over to Tales, aka Marvel. Siobhan, earlier in the episode, you said it was a real struggle to get through all your Marvel books this week.
It was just a lot more than DC, and I was a lot less excited for these than I was for DC.
I mean, a few of these sucked, and I feel like we get criticized a little bit for not complaining about Marvel enough, which is...
Well, strap in, guys.
It's insane to me, because I feel like we've never complained more about a book than Civil War 2.
Oh my God, I know.
I thought we could kick off with what we didn't like from Marvel this week.
Oh gosh, okay.
I passed a few of on a few of these. I'm going to read the Captain America's later tonight and a few other things. But I want to start with Monsters Unleashed issue 3. Mm-hmm. Cullen Bunn, art by Lin or Yu. This art didn't Steve Epting do the first issue of this? Was it Epting?
I have no clue. I kind of thought it was you the whole way through, but I could be totally
wrong. No, it definitely wasn't. Literally, you did an issue of IVX. So I don't know why they're flitting between artists for their their events. It's really weird. Like, why
don't
they just have
annoying?
Yeah,
I guess because they're coming out on a weekly basis, they can't really keep up with it.
That's the smallest part of this event's problem. So there's this kid, and he can draw monsters, and then he summons them when he draws them. And so he's been drawing all the Kirby monsters, your Fin Fang Fooms, your Googums, your I don't know who else, all these funny, all the cool funny looking Kirby monsters. Mm-hmm. And then he summons them and they're telling him to stop doing that. Mm. But now all these other disgusting monsters are showing up, and all of those Kirby monsters show up to where the Avengers are fighting them, and the Avengers are like, oh no, now we have to fight more monsters. But turns out the old monsters who already lived on Earth are here to beat the butts of these newcomers that they don't like. And so the monsters
our Earth to destroy.
The monsters who can talk fight the monsters who can't talk, and the Avengers are like, let's just let this happen and save people. Then they discover that this kid who can summon things, and they're like, how come you can summon things when you draw them? And guess what, everybody? He's inhuman.
Whoa.
Which is so boring. Why can't he just be like a magic kid, or he has like a magic pen, or a magic pad of paper?
They're still really pushing the Inhumans over at Marvel.
I thought this was like their new status quo. Was like, okay, we get it. We ram the Inhumans down your throats too much. And like, to be fair, I'm a fan of Charles Soule's Uncanny Inhumans run.
Yeah,
I even read all of the all new Inhumans run, which wasn't even that good, but I read it.
Mm.
We just came off Civil War 2, which revolved around an inhuman, you know, changing the Marvel Universe is like, you know, the way everybody interacted within it and having a massive shakeup. And that's exactly what's happening here as well. And this is the event that's not meant to feel like the other events. But when you have an Inhuman at the heart of it, it does feel exactly like that.
Yeah.
And straight away, like, you know, Medusa and Karnak are like, oh, we need to take ownership of him. He's one of us. It's like, we just saw this. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just like, are there, like, I may have missed this along the way somewhere, but are new mutants not being created anymore? Like, why are there no mutant characters coming out and causing mischief? And I don't know. It does seem like a little bit like I did roll my eyes when it was like, oh, he's an Inhuman too. Because come on, guys, there's too many Inhumans now.
I think I'm going to drop this.
Is it done?
I didn't know. No, it's like 6 issues, I think. And then Cullen Bunn's doing like an ongoing series based off of this called Monsters Unleashed after it. Mm. I like Elsa Bloodstone, who's in it. I think she's cool.
Yeah. I wish that this was more just like a straight up Elsa Bloodstone book.
That's what the ongoing is going to become, I think.
That's better.
Her own monsters. But if there's a fucking Inhuman who can draw things, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
Just give it a magic pen, and then at the end of the series, Elsa's like, I'll be taking that. And then you think she's broken it, but really she's stored it away in her magic bag or something.
And also, I feel like no one can write Moon Girl properly.
Except the writers of Moon Girl.
Yeah, there's just really poor characterization of her in every single other book that she shows up in. Which
she's
is
like,
sort of
I'm smart. Why doesn't anyone listen to me? Because I'm smart. And even though I'm just young, but I'm smart.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I feel like Moon Girl would just go like, all right, well, no one's listening to me, so I'm just going to fix this by myself. Bye.
Yeah.
That would be her vibe.
But like, to his defense, Cullen Bunn is balancing like 40 characters
in
this book. But
it's a tough ask. And it's not pulled off seamlessly.
Yeah. I like that first issue, but I don't really care what happens in the rest of this. But that said, you can just kind of skim it.
Yeah. But so, basically, this is like, the whole point of this is, oh, you guys thought that those monsters were bad? Well, actually, there's like a king of the monsters, and he's sending way more monsters to Earth, so there's going to be heaps more monsters.
And they're just like the most bland, boring monsters. They're just like, oh,
they're just like big, generic
kaiju. This thing's got three eyes and a big tongue.
Yep. Lame. Boring, guys.
Next. Another dot.
What else did you not enjoy?
Daredevil issue 17. You didn't read this one?
No.
This is the confession issue in which Daredevil tells everybody how he convinced everyone that he was not Daredevil anymore again.
Oh, okay.
And there's some interesting moments in it. Like he kind of reveals that he went to different people. He goes to Doctor Strange.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
She goes to Silver Surfer. He goes to Damon Hellfire. And Damon Hellfire's like, you could ask Mephisto. He's done this kind of thing for people before.
Sweet reference to that Spider-Man story that everyone hated.
Yeah, so
Brand New Day or whatever.
He even goes to Emma Frost, but it looks like it was the the purple kids, the purple man's kids. It looks like he's...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. They're going to be involved somehow. So I'm still going to read issue 18. I just thought, I don't know why I'm reading this. I hate these kind of stories where they just kind of fill in the gaps of something that you kind of, you know, like it's been 16 issues since they jumped forward in time. I don't think you really need to... Nothing's really ever improved by going back and telling people what happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I didn't love Lifeless at all.
Oh, wow.
Do you want me to keep going with things I didn't enjoy? Is this a fun segment? The Ultimate Squared number 4 by Al Ewing, Travel Foreman. I really don't like Travel Foreman's art on this.
I really do. I understand. Like, I feel like he's an acquired taste. But for me, that taste has been acquired.
Right. I also just, I'm not, there's so many characters in this and there's so many things going on and there's so much like celestial bullshit happening. And then they undo my favorite thing about this series, which I know some people are quite happy about. Some people like Lynn, who you've been hearing taping up boxes for this entire episode. So yeah, I get it. I hate her too.
I really didn't hate this. I quite enjoyed this issue. It's sort of, it's still about the kind of organization who are there to watch. Who watches the Watchmen, guys? These guys, they are watching the Ultimates.
Who
ultimates the Ultimates? It's a bunch of other dudes who are making sure that they don't do Ultimates business. And this is just kind of a big fight. This is just a big fight issue between them. And they all get paired off into little fights. And I quite enjoyed it because they're quite evenly matched. And some of them have cool power sets that are weird and that I haven't seen before.
But
and it's
so
more
like,
compelling than any other like superhero fight I've seen in a while. Like the bit where someone shuts down all of Black Panther's suit, and so it's like, now you're just a dude in tidy whities. What are you gonna do? And he's like, well, that's not where my power comes from. So get ready for the actual fight.
Yeah,
that was cool. And I think that like Galactus was never gonna stay the Lifebringer. You know, so like cool,
The whole reason I liked this series is because they, you know, took on these massive cosmic threats and then they dealt with them in their own way. This series started out so strongly when it was the first run of it, and then it got completely fucked by Civil War II. Like, yeah. I don't think any series got as fucked as this series got fucked by Civil War II. Then when it came back, I was like, you know what, this is all going to be okay. They're going into space. It's going to be great. Mm. We're 4 issues in. They haven't achieved shit yet. And there's already they may as well, this team that's come after them may as well be like the superhero representation of Civil War 2.
They're here to fuck.
Well, no, they're here to prevent them from being the Ultimates, from working together. And they haven't even done anything wrong yet. They just can't be the old.
Well, they were told that they weren't allowed to work together anymore. And they are in space. And I like the Logos character. I think it's kind of fun. But I appreciate those criticisms. But I think I just like it.
Okay.
I think all the things that you don't like, I'm like, I like that.
Well, at least I know I won't get any argument from you on this one. Invincible Iron Man number 4 by Brian Michael Bendis. Show favorite, Brian Michael Bendis. Stefano Caselli with Marte Gracia on art.
Nice.
Art is amazing. This is Riri Williams as Ironheart, teaming up with Pepper Potts against a bunch of ninjas. And she runs away because her suit's been taken over by a golem. Techno golem, the worst kind of golem. And so she runs through an apartment and finds some kid on his laptop and then opens up the Tony Stark AI on his laptop.
I doubt that kid's laptop would be powerful enough.
Also, I don't understand how the fuck that works.
No, it doesn't. Just magic science.
It's one of those books where, like, I actually realize I kind of do like it, the really, really talky, exposition-heavy Bendis-style book where it's discussions. At least he does that stuff well. When it's, like, this, like, really fast action book in which nothing actually gets achieved.
Yeah. This is a long book of people fighting with no resolution to it.
And it ends on a really dumb cliffhanger where, like, the kid's meant to have pressed enter, but maybe he didn't press enter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why
it's
that's...
pretty, it's very, very silly. And this kind of, like, yeah. All of a sudden, Pepper is a super badass ninja for some reason. And, like...
I get her being able to hold her own, sure. But, like, against 40 ninjas? I don't know. That was
weird. Seems like a struggle.
Techno ninjas as well.
Yeah. Look, they're the toughest kind of ninja. I didn't hate this that much, but it did, like, I read it in like 2 seconds.
I know.
Like, you just flip through it so fast because fucking nothing happens.
And that's why I don't drop Bendis books, because even though I like to find little to love in them, they're quick.
But it's still taking valuable time away from your life. I don't know
what's wrong with me, Siobhan. I don't know.
You got a lot of problems, my friend.
So yeah, that was another book that I did not like that much. And then finally, and this hurts, World of Wakanda, Black Panther, World of Wakanda number 4, written by Roxane Gay with Ta-Nehisi Coates, and art by Aletha E. Martinez and Roberto Poggi with Rochelle Rosenberg on colors. I've really, really enjoyed this run and how, like, what a great romance comic it is. Instead of concentrating on the romance, which they've built so well over the last 3 issues, this introduces a problem and the entire issue is them dealing with the problem, and then the problem, like also the next issue is the last issue of this miniseries as well. But it kind of, like, when we're introduced to these characters in the Black Panther run that Ta-Nehisi Coates started, one of them is in jail, and at no point in this run do we see them working towards the part that she goes in jail. That threat and it is introduced and dealt with in this issue, and that's why the character is in jail.
Right. Yeah.
I just thought it was just like it was introducing way too much stuff in one issue that didn't really felt like it was building to that it was building towards in the prior issues. And in doing that, like, it took away from what I love about the book, which is the relationship stuff. There was very small amounts of that in this.
I thought that was so... I think you're a sleepy, cranky baby, because I really liked
did
this
I
issue.
Call you that when you were clearly a sleepy, cranky baby? In
no, but you should have.
I did say you had a cold heart. Yeah. That's
it. Because this was, this was a tough issue to read because it sees the relationship breaking down to a certain extent. Because Anika is too obsessed with her pride and her duty, and that comes in the way of her relationship, and she doesn't know how to love and be in a relationship like that when it's hard for her to feel pride in how she's behaving in her sort of professional capacity as a cool warrior. And I understood why she killed that dude, and I understand why she goes to jail. And I didn't even feel like it was especially, like, yeah, the character who she, you know, kills was just introduced in this issue, but it wasn't totally out of nowhere. It was the father of another character.
And yeah, so now I still think it was.
But now we see why she is pushed to this. You know, like, I thought it was pretty well done. And it was a long issue to read. It took a while. It was pretty dense. And it was pretty wordy, and a lot happened in it. But because it's all stuff that we've seen before in the Black Panther books, I sort of thought that was acceptable because they sort of, you know, they had a lot to cover.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Look, I don't think I didn't like it. I thought it was not the direction that I thought the book would take. And
it was probably the felt weakest, like, yeah, maybe.
It just felt like so much exposition within this. In a similar way to how I felt at the start of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther run, just introducing so many characters and so many conflicting opinions towards these characters.
But I like that even. Like, I like that every character, like, because people are complicated. No one's the same person to all people. And so this character who dies is a horrible sort of rapist, but his daughter loves him and only knows him as her father. And it's like, my dad wouldn't do that because he's my dad. But everyone, you know, everyone's, like, every... you know, murderer, everyone's like, oh, he was a really nice guy to me, you know? So I thought that was pretty well done.
I wasn't talking about him. I was talking about, okay, like, the way that, you know, like, do I serve my country or serve my heart?
Oh, yeah.
Do I kill this person or I don't know. Like, yeah. There's a lot of just, like, big, like, do I, don't I's in this, which I guess is comics as a whole. You know what? I'll give it... there's one issue left. Obviously, I'm not going to drop this one.
No. I still really enjoyed it. But I can appreciate that it was definitely the most exposition heavy, and probably the relationship stuff was a little bit, I'm always annoyed by characters like that. Just like, you just like her, just deal with it, just be with her, you know? So that was a little bit frustrating, but I still enjoyed this issue.
And what have you got next? Because have you got any ones that you didn't like that you want to have a little whinge about?
Did you read...
You want to be a big cranky baby?
Did you read The Clone Saga?
Tired Cranky
Baby?
The
Clone Conspiracy? Whatever this is?
No.
Okay, so this was the final issue of Dan Slott's...
The final one? Shit, I should have read this one.
Yeah. Oh, it's all right. The final issue of the Clone Conspiracy. So this has been the Spidey event for this year with art by Jim Chung, which is probably the best thing about this.
And it's the prequel to Clone Empire coming next from Marvel. And then Clone Wars. Oh, and then...
And then everyone's a Secret Clones. And... look, this is like, so everyone on the planet is for some reason now decomposing because of something that got released into the atmosphere by evil Ben Reilly Jackal. Oh, God. Who cloned a bunch of people. And then obviously in the end, they make it better because Spidey and Anna Maria come up with a signal that they can release through the air that makes everyone stop decomposing except some of the people who are already too decomposed. So they... efficiently got rid of some of the clones that they don't want, but kept a couple of characters around.
So who gets kept and who passes on?
J. Jonah Jameson's wife pieces out. Gwen Stacy and her dad are both gone.
Really?
Yep. I don't know. I think Doc Ock dies? Doc Ock is gone. He saves Anna Maria in his kind of final... I'm a good guy. I love you, Anna Maria.
Still opportunity for them to bring all these characters back again.
Yes, absolutely.
In Civil Clone 2.
But like, then they go into the Jackal's whatever room and there's a whole bunch of clones, like the Prowlers there. And they're like, oh, thank God you're okay. And also, whatever. It was pretty boring. Yeah. Aren't they the Oh, I thought they were the clones. Lynn is telling me that they're the originals.
Also, there are no... Who knows?
Look, who knows? Well, this book is confusing as hell. Even if you've been reading all of the Spidey books, as I almost do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Like, it's still... It's it was wrapped up really neatly in one issue, all of the problems.
Yeah, I didn't realize it would happen like that. Yeah. At some point, does Peter Parker put his hands above his head and say, no more clones?
If only...
Cool. So, all right, next, what, did you not enjoy anything else? I really enjoy this.
U.S. Avengers?
You see, so I wasn't wrapped by Ultimates 2, Ultimate Squared or whatever the fuck, I was like, I'll read U.S. Avengers later. But I haven't been enjoying this. I flipped through it. You're right, the America is Great tones is actually kind of annoying, right?
Yeah, totally. I have a real problem with, like, just... all-out patriotism for no reason. And this kind of, like, at the beginning, I thought that they made this Gold Skull, or whatever he's called, character out to be quite a compelling villain. And in this, they just made him, like, a big, dumb idiot who hates freedom. But we love freedom, because America. And then, like, the reason they take him down is because he makes a super suit out of gold, because he's like, that's the coolest shit ever. And they're like, well, gold's actually a really soft metal, so you're really easy to crush now. And that's kind of how it ends. And that was, like, a really, like, I almost feel like three issues wasn't enough for this arc, and it kind of wrapped up too neatly and wrapped up with, like, you know, ugh, yeah.
Yeah. Look, I'll read this and I'm going to give this a pass for a while, even if it means I'll skim through a few of the first issues, because when New Avengers got going, it became one of my favorite books each month.
Yeah. I think that this, like, so far for me, this feels just massively average. Sure. It doesn't make me angry, but it doesn't sort of interest me in any way. So I fully believe that Al Ewing has the potential to turn this into something great, because that's also probably how I felt about his, what was that book called?
New Avengers.
New Avengers. That New Avengers run. But yeah, so far he wrote a pretty good Squirrel Girl in this. It was pretty fun.
Great.
But that was about it.
Tough character to write when you're not Ryan North.
Yeah, totally. She uses a bit of like cute science, which was quite good fun.
So are we getting towards the let's talk about Marvel books we liked?
I mean, both Captain America books
great
were
covers
out
this week, by the way.
Yeah, good covers this week. And I mean, so Sam Wilson is all very much about the court case surrounding Rage, and the repercussions of Sam Wilson leaking the video of Rage being attacked.
Yep.
And it proving his innocence. But everyone's like, you got that from secret bird cameras. That's obviously inadmissible as evidence. Bam, Rage goes to jail. Which is spun out over a whole issue. So it was a bit of a talky issue and it was not the most compelling thing of all time. And it ends with, you know, a bunch of young kids painting up their faces like Rage and getting a bunch of Molotov cocktails and they're going to go bomb a bank for some reason.
Great.
So it's going to be like riots on the streets.
White the power.
Yeah. It was like totally fine. Totally fine issue. And then in the Steve Rogers Captain America, and we're seeing a lot of Cap books at the moment coming out in quick succession. Like, there's another Captain America Steve Rogers book out next week, because I'm assuming they're trying to get it out real fast before... I can't even remember the name of this
clone movie. Empire.
Secret clone. Empire. Secret clone empire of secrets. So this
clones is unleashed.
The sort of thing tying this issue together is Captain America talking to his best bud Helmet.
Mm-hmm.
His best bud Baron Helmet Zemo, whatever. Trying to be like, look, you don't remember because this was in a kind of weird alternate universe, but actually we're best friends. And I've got to try and convince you of that. So we see flashbacks again to Steve Rogers' childhood when he starts getting the super soldier serum and his decision to try and kill the guy who came up with the super soldier serum. But then his best buddy Helmet is there to help him out because he couldn't quite pull the trigger. But Helmet does because he's a good guy.
So this history that Captain America is now part of, this only exists within his head? Or
I
is
think
this,
so.
Yeah, right. Okay, sure.
Because it wasn't like the book ends with them having a nice cuddle and Helmet believing him and being like, now we get to work. But I don't think it's because he then remembers all this stuff. I think that he believes it.
Sure.
So I don't quite know why Cap is so convinced of this. And we see that the new Quasar, who I don't feel like has really been expanded on as much as you would think a new Quasar would.
No.
But turns out she's gay, I think. That's nice. And she has found where...
Gazer.
Nailed it.
That's seriousissues.tumblr.com at levdog if you want to follow me on Twitter.
Two important things happen at the end of this issue. Number one, Quasar has found where Kobik and the Thunderbolts are hiding, so that could solve a lot of Steve Rogers' problems. But also, Taskmaster, one of my personal fave Marvel villains, has somehow found the black box footage of when... Cap pushed, what's his name, out of the plane. Jack Flag and said, Hail Hydra. And so Taskmaster's like, that's very interesting. We can use this to our advantage. So that's kind of, that's interesting. And it's all just amping up
great
for this big event. I pretty much enjoyed both of those books.
Great.
Anyway, what else have you got?
I've got some books that I did like that Marvel put out
Yay!
This week. Some of them I loved. Jason Aaron putting out the best stuff that Marvel has to offer. Doctor Strange number 17 and The Mighty Thor 16 were both excellent this week. The Mighty Thor was all about like a trial of Thor with the Shi'ar gods, who I think are new beings that we've not seen before.
Cool, they're very shiny.
And meanwhile, there's a meeting of the realms, the Congress of Worlds. Volstagg, the big fat Asgardian, represents Asgard in the Congress of Worlds. And before they take a vote, he needs his allies there. And because Jane Foster is stuck arguing with the Shi'ar gods, he is stalling. And he has, was it called like a filibuster?
Yeah, he's filibustering by talking about all of his favorite meals. Classic Volstagg.
But that was great.
Yeah, really good.
And, you know, the art by Russell Dauterman is the best. Like,
yes,
I think this,
so good.
I just think this is my, like, from an art point of view, this is always my favorite book. I think
Absolutely.
Russell Dauterman is amazing. Actually, you know what? And he's quite similar to Chris Anker, who we're going to talk about in a moment. He is excellent at drawing big, muscly dudes and beautiful hair on women. And
he's also great at all of the kind of weird, slightly cosmic,
yes,
vaguely religious stuff that goes on in this issue. So we see, like, there's a contest of gods. The Shi'ar gods have, you know, forced Thor to take part in. And they think that to get the most prayers, so whoever gets the most prayers wins. And they think that by, you know, causing a huge natural disaster on a planet, they will get maximum prayers because everyone will be praying before they die. And then after, you know, in the aftermath, everyone will be going to the temples to pray to them. And Thor just cannot allow that to happen because she's a cool chick. And so she saves everyone. And everyone goes, oh, Thor's a really awesome god. We're going to pray to her. So she wins.
Meanwhile, back in Asgard, we get some great character work with Kerr, the brother of Odin. And we also get... Sorry, Kull? Kull or Kerr?
Kull.
We also get some great stuff with Lady Sif, who is underutilized all the time. And even more so is... What's her name? Like Brolga or something? What's her name? With the blonde hair? Who's that? She's big.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
I'm going to go with Brolga. It's definitely not Brolga, but...
sounds about right.
Yeah, but... I don't know. I just like, I love all the Asgardians, especially Brolga. I love seeing any work with them. So yeah, this is a lot of fun. Super great. And it ends up with Asgard attacking the Shi'ars, which is awesome. I really enjoyed Doctor Strange this week. It was a fun issue drawn by Fraser Irving. All the art was done by Fraser Irving.
I love Fraser Irving.
And this is a really rough style for him. Normally his stuff is very clean and almost looks like it was, you know, completely done on a computer. This has had like a very painted quality to it. And this is Doctor Strange trying desperately to find Wong, who has been taken over by Mr. Misery. Mr. Misery has also tracked down the last patients that Doctor Strange worked on before he became the Sorcerer Supreme. So there's a lot going on here. Fucking Man-Thing is in this issue.
Yes.
Which is always great. Even more exciting, Thor shows up at the end of this one too.
Jason Aaron loves crossing over the characters that he's writing.
Well, so he should. He has absolutely. Such a good grasp of both of them. So yeah, this is both two very enjoyable reads this week.
Agreed.
I think the Marvel book that I enjoyed the most this week was The Punisher number 9 by Becky Cloonan and the new fill-in artist, Matt Horak. Just because, like, you know, I was really worried about what this series was going to do after Steve Dillon passed away. Mm-hmm. You know, the main villain in this is, like, you know, a pretty ridiculous caricature of you know, your archetypal Punisher villain who rips off the faces of his villains and does the mutant growth serum thing, whatever the fuck it is, to give himself superpowers. And one of my favorite things about good Punisher runs is when you've developed up the characters enough that you can take the Punisher out of it and he's not even in this issue until the very, very end of it. And you don't miss him. It still feels like a Punisher book because these characters, this face villain and Ortiz, the FBI agent, are both so well developed. And this is mostly just a battle of wits between the two of them. There's some fucked up stuff going on with other FBI agents, but like, this was like just firing on all cylinders, and the art is absolutely competent. There's some real manic stuff that goes on here, and it's done so well. Frank is in this for the first page and the last page. Oh, he buries the old lady.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
That's nice.
But
this was so good. I really love Ortiz. I love like Face is such an scary, evil guy. Becky Cloonan has such a good grasp of like what a Punisher comic should feel like, I think. And so I think she's really nailing this run. There's a really like, you know, heartbreaking death and really beyond evil guys that you kind of feel like really suit this comic. And I totally didn't even notice that the Punisher wasn't even in this because I'm so engrossed in this particular story, which is
great.
Awesome.
I hope that Becky Cloonan stays on Punisher for a while.
Yeah, same.
Ortiz is a great character, and and I love that she was aware of like what happens when you overdose on MGH, mutant growth hormone or whatever it is. That thing is great.
It's a new scary drug.
Cool.
Whatever.
I also loved, and this is a bit more of Chip Zdarsky for you, issue 3 of Star-Lord by Chip Zdarsky and Chris Anker on art with colors by Matt Wilson. This was by far my favorite issue of this so far. I mean, we only had 3, but I love their take on Star-Lord. I think it's the most compelling the character has been since the Abnett and Lanning Super Cosmic run. It makes him, you know, he kind of takes the best of Chris Pratt's take on the character and then the comic stuff as well. Chris Anker draws him so goddamn hunky. Like, this is like the most incredible torso, chest. I mean, just like the amount of hair on half-naked Star-Lord. It is sculpted.
They spent a lot of time on those panels, and I, for one, appreciate it. But like all of like, I feel like this is just like, this is such good work from Chris Anker. I don't know when I've seen such incredible like facial characterization from him.
Dauterman and Anker, like having them both these comics come out at the same time. I was like, man,
yeah,
these guys know how to draw the hell out of a shirtless dude.
Yeah, that's true.
And beautiful man. I'm not a beard guy at all.
No, but they draw it. He like so often beards look really stupid in comics, but they really nail this beard.
He's just beautiful.
Yeah, he's
everything
a beautiful
about
man.
Him is beautiful. And there's some incredible gags in this. You know, one of my favorite things, and he's been really restrained in all of his comics this week, is his editorial notes, his writer's notes. When you see something like, you know, coming from like, you know, Chip, you know, him responding to some dialogue that's been said. And in this one, Star-Lord tries to call Kitty Pryde on the phone and then said, like, you know, oh, you idiot, you left the dumbest message. Thank you and goodbye. Man, your charm game just drops through the floor on the phone. Why do people even phone each other anymore? Asterix. And then they don't. Chip. I thought that was excellent. So, yeah, this is everything I want from a book that I didn't know I wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're really nailing it. Also, Daredevil is such a, like, such a wet blanket in this. I really enjoyed that.
Yep.
He's so, like, irritatingly moralistic in a way that I was like, just let him keep the money. Christ almighty, Daredevil. Who gives a shit? But also, like, the one thing that I was like, only just because she's a villain in, like,
yes,
so many books at the moment.
We complained about her recently.
Yeah.
Black Cat is...
The last page reveal is Black Cat is going to be a bad guy in this, which is a bit like...
Not again. She's in every fucking book.
But oh well. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yep.
So I'm assuming you didn't get around to Uncanny.
No, but I plan to because I really enjoy this Maximus.
All right, well, I'll try not to give away too much, but continues to be excellent.
Yeah, you can tell that I like this book because when you said that when you'd read Spider-Man but I hadn't, I was like, tell me everything that happened because I don't want to read it.
I know, and I gave away the endings of so many things that you didn't read. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
But yeah, I'm still really enjoying this. I love Maximus the Mad. So solid. Really fun.
That's
really
stuff.
Fun issue.
Awesome. Now we move over to Image. Can we talk about Image? Because Image had
a
fantastic, if not the best, week. We'll start with the glorious return of Sex Criminals by Chip Zdarsky and Matt Fraction. Man, this was an absolute return to form. They took 8 months off. So, you know, when comics do that, you're like, what the fuck happened again? And luckily they've given you a little primer as to what happened in the first, 16 issues of this?
Yeah, very
15
thorough.
Issues of this? It was really well done. It's crazy this is only issue 16 of this series.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, and they've taken a lot of breaks throughout it, but it really feels like they've covered way more ground in 16 issues. There's no point in us really talking about the plot of this at all. I like where it's going. You know, it's still them against Kegel Face, our main characters, John and Suze. There's a gag in this in which John and Suze have a poster on their wall, and it looks like the Hamilton poster, but if you look closely, it is a significantly less important American figure, Taft. So there's a musical for Taft in this universe. There's lots of great gags throughout it. It's a very, very funny issue that also deals with, like, you know, John is a nuanced character with like, a lot of problems.
Yeah, he sort of almost reminds me of Yorick from Why the Last Man, in that he's so flawed and he's so wrong most of the time. Like, he's always behaving in a way that's quite sort of emotionally led and usually is the wrong call in a way that I quite enjoy.
I'm going to use that note to seek into the next Image book we're going to talk about. But before I do that, I just want to say, Sex Criminals, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really even like... Sorry at that. You were doing so well and I'm just going to ruin it. But there was a really nice moment for the creepy anime kid, Dewey, that I really enjoyed. I thought that was sick. One thing that I'm like... I sort of wish that... Because... Like, this book has, like, big relationship stuff going on between John and Suze. And I kind of wish that, like, it wasn't all, like, Susie being like, we need to sit down and have a talk about this.
No, she's just trying to encourage him to get out of his shell and talk about problems. It's like, you know, I mean, I guess it's like her. She trying to, is the positive treading on eggshells one because he's so, you know.
Yeah.
Fucked up in the head sometimes.
It just seems like a little bit more gender cliched than I would normally expect from them.
Sure. I mean,
but still super
in
enjoyable.
Its defense, I love Suze and can't stand John. So.
yeah. John is not likable. I don't think anyone's supposed to like him.
No, I think you are. I think, you know, people that are, a lot of dudes are afflicted with similar problems to the one John deals with. So I think there is a level of relatability to them. I'm a happy-go-lucky person, so I relate to Suze.
Mm. And I hate everything, so I'm John. Actually, I'm Dewey.
The creepy
I'm
anime
not,
one.
Sorry.
I love it. Sex Criminals is great. Anyway, as I was saying, John, you know, as a flawed male character, I love that you open the book knowing that this is going to talk about it. Kill or Be Killed is a book by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips and Elizabeth Breitweiser that I have, I enjoy, but I don't love it. I haven't loved it like I love everything else these two creators have worked on together in the past. And I realize it's because the main character fucking sucks. But he's meant to fucking suck.
Yeah.
And he's a gifted enough writer that you view him as the protagonist,
and you kind of want, you're like, is he the good guy? I guess he's the good guy. And he says some things like he's so cocky and confident, but while also admitting to him getting things wrong all the time. And you're not really sure if he's in the right ever. And he's kind of gross towards girls, but it's kind of not actually depicted as gross because it's semi from his point of view.
Yeah, and I think he's just complicated. Yeah, like, I love this book. Like, I have loved
this issue. I love
this. Was
because
a fucking phenomenal
it introduces
issue.
who could be the protagonist of
yeah,
this book.
Yeah, that was and, like, that was the biggest bait and switch of this series so far, is that you think you're seeing this all through the bad guy's lens this whole time, and you don't even realize, and then you're introduced to the good guy. It's so incredible. I really love this book.
So I don't want to spoil it. We don't need to say who the good guy is.
No.
But
she rocks.
We gave it away, mate. yeah, I thought, yeah, this is like a almost perfect issue of this book.
Yeah.
And any doubts that I had towards it, gone. I never really doubts. I knew that were going to come good. I mean, the demon stuff I could live with. Mm. But it was just like this main character, he, like, in the same way that, like, I guess, like, lots of the criminal characters suck too. Is,
yeah.
They, like, they're more nuanced and, like, they're kind of, I mean, the fucking book is called Criminal. So, like, immediately, yeah, I guess with this guy, I didn't know what's, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I didn't even find, like, I don't find him that unlikable just because we have seen how he gets to the point that he gets to, and it all kind of makes sense. Like, it all
justifies
leads to
so much shitty stuff.
Yeah,
that, like,
I mean, what shitty stuff? Like, yeah, he has complicated relationships with women, but who among us doesn't sometimes accidentally treat people like shit or get into a sexual relationship that you maybe didn't intend to?
Yeah, yeah.
I just think he seems real, and I think he seems fleshed out, and that's what I love about this book. And this book probably has my favorite back matter of any.
Yes, this one
of
in
anything
particular is
like
great.
Like such great essays in the back, and I always really enjoy, like Ed Brubaker puts in a little bit where he kind of talks about what he's reading and enjoying at the moment, and I really always love that.
Yep.
Because he has great recommendations and is, I fucking love this. This is great. Perfect. This is this was my favorite issue of the week. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect comic.
Amazing. Over to God Country number 2 by Donny Cates and Jeff Shaw on art with Jason Wordy on color. This was the story about the old man who has dementia and is like basically chasing his family away by being so insane to look after. But whenever he holds this ginormous sword, his memories come flooding back to him, and he's an all-powerful warrior. And this kind of deals with a god coming to take the sword back, but he refuses to.
Also, the sword doesn't want to go.
Yeah. And
the sword is sentient.
It was an all-talk, no-action comic, but it was done really, really well. The art's beautiful. And I'm 100% on this series. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I'm on board.
Over to Robert Kirkman. Robert Kirkman Corner. We've got two Robert Kirkman books. The Walking Dead, number 164. Kind of continued the story of them trying to deal with this enormous, like the biggest horde of zombies that they've ever encountered in the series so far. That's fine, whatever. I don't really get people that complain about the threats not being big enough in this book anymore, because for me it's all about the balancing of all the different characters and the different, like, kind of pushing the story forward in bit by bit in relation to what the characters are dealing with at the time. There's some great stuff between Negan and Rick in this book, in this issue. It's always enjoyable. I'm actually quite enjoying the serialized Here's Negan origin story that we're getting in the Image Plus magazine each month, and I think I might be enjoying that more than I am Walking Dead, even though it's like 5 pages at a time.
Interesting.
It is good though. Invincible number 133 is the last of 12 issues. So the first of the last 12 issues of this run.
Check.
Obviously, got to give a shout out to the two, three classic Image covers that we got this week. Celebrating the 25th anniversary. This kind of, I wasn't the biggest fan of issue 132 of Invincible, but this moved the story in a better, more interesting direction. Again, another great thing that Kirkman does in this book is there's lots of characters that he balances, and where the last one was just all only focusing on one fight, we kind of see the universe build up a bit more, open up a bit more. So exciting to see how this series bows out. Finally, I read Manifest Destiny issue number 26, which is the Lewis and Clark making their way from one side of America to the other and encountering all kinds of crazy savage beasts and weird mystical stuff. And this one deals with a fog that allows people makes people hallucinate all the horrors they've seen in their life before. Now, it's very different to all the issues that we've seen, but no less compelling. Really good. Image, nice. You did good this week. I award you Publisher of the Week. So now we can move over to... I've just got two books left. What do you got?
Nice. All right. I got a few more than that.
I fucking forgot to read Ether this
week.
You
forgot to read Ether and Archie.
And Archie.
Nutbag. Ether, man.
All nutbag.
Ether is a... God, Ether is a good book.
You know what's not an ongoing?
Oh, well, I'm okay with that. That's fine.
But
wrap it up.
The only reason... Yeah, I know, but it's such an insanely big world that I thought there could be so many adventures in. But maybe he'll return to it.
Absolutely. In this, we see a way more backstory of our main character's wife or former wife,
mm-hmm.
who had actually gone to the Ether first and had a really horrifying experience there. And that's what's kind of great about this, is because it seems like this quite innocent, beautiful,
whimsical,
magical land. Yeah. But she was kind of locked up and brutally tortured by the sort of villain of the piece as a young girl, when she accidentally found a secret well that took her to the Ether in her grandma's basement. And this issue is mostly about this. And then it ends with, as we saw in the last issue, there's a tear between our two worlds, and things from the Ether are coming into our world, and our hero has to put a stop to it. Even though everyone thinks he's a crazy hobo, he has to put a stop to it. And, I mean, David Rubin is such an incredible artist. This is such an incredible book.
It's the best.
I love it. I flip and love it, guys.
I'm going to read that as soon as this episode is up.
Excellent. I also read... just like as a really sweet thing, if you have kids, I think this is a really solid all ages book. And also, just if you like Jim Henson, if you like the Storyteller comic is really, really good. This one was set in Ireland and was all about giants and was just absolutely lovely and delightful with beautiful art. And I really enjoyed that.
Excellent. Can we talk about a book that we both read?
Yes, please.
And loved, I think. Savage by B. Clay Moore, Clayton Henry, Louis LaRosa, and Brian Reber over at Valiant. This is... like one of my favorite books.
Yeah, wow.
Right now.
This is such an amazing book. Yeah.
So there are, this is all about like a kid who is basically forced to grow up in a world of dinosaurs. He basically takes on the people that killed his mother in this issue and gets transported to Earth. So it looks like this is almost like a prologue.
Yeah, this is almost like an origin story to what will hopefully be like a cool superhero, but so, so well done. And every moment is a shock. And the art, the two different artists working in tandem is so effective,
yeah.
so brilliantly realized. And the sort of horrifying things which seem more cartoony in the Savage Land immediately become incredibly realistic and horrifying in our world.
Yeah.
So cleverly done and so well written. This is such a brilliant example of a book that shows, doesn't tell. It's not overly wordy. They don't need to explain everything to us. They just let the action take place.
That's such a good point. I can't think of a comic like that's come out in the last few months that is like a better example of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Like really, really solid, really incredible storytelling. I love this.
Great issue, great series. And now he's in our world, in the Valiant universe properly.
Yeah.
So this is very exciting.
But is it the Stalinverse?
Probably not. I also love that you get it's a beautifully presented book too.
Yeah.
It's a really nice thick cover and great paper. And yeah, Valiant doing great stuff. And this
is
absolutely one of the best. The last book I read this week was Animosity 5.
I decided to drop this.
I'm going to drop this.
Nice.
You review your next books. That's all I'm going to say.
Two more issues I read. I read Peepland, which is this kind of gritty grindhouse comic set in the world of sex workers. It's sort of complicated to explain where the plot is at this point, but things are moving ahead and I enjoy this. It is dirty and horrible and makes you feel gross, but you are unlikely to find a more sympathetic portrayal or just humanistic portrayal of a really diverse range of people, like sex workers, gay people, people with incurable illnesses. Like everything's covered in this, and I think it's really solid, and the ending was a shock for me. So I really enjoy this book. I think it's really good. And on a very, on a completely different note, it was issue 17 of Archie this week, which is the sort of Cheryl Blossom series. And we see Cheryl trying her darndest to seduce Archie by sort of sending him secret messages and presents that she knows he'll like, and setting up a situation where she saves someone from a burning car and films it so that Archie will think that she's a good person. But then when he arrives to their date, and it's unexplained, rolling down a hill in a vat of molasses and just crashes into a tree. She can't do it. She's like, why does everyone like you so much? You're such a goofball. And it ends with Veronica returning and claiming her Archie-based prize. So good, solid issue. Joe Eisenmuir is actually growing on me as the artist in this book. I think this is easily his most solid issue in terms of physical comedy.
Probably just in time for him to switch with another artist too.
Yeah, totally.
Do you reckon that they'll have Archie rolling in a vat of molasses in the Riverdale TV show soon?
Man, if they did, it would actually win me over. Make Archie a goofball. I'm done. Whatever. Netflix.
No, it's CW.
CW.
You have been listening to Serious Issues. Those are all our reviews of the week. Before we end the show, this week we've got some pretty good comics coming out. I'm most excited about a new Greg Rucka book coming out through Image called Old Guard.
Ooh, goodness, yes, that looks good.
And Image are also re-releasing a comic that we missed out on last year, called Sun Bakery.
Yep.
Which is a anime inspired. Is it actually a Japanese artist or no?
It's Corey
Walker?
I can't think of his last name.
No.
Corey something or other.
Corey
He's real
something
good.
Or other. My favorite.
I'm real into it.
We get the second issue of Supergirl being super.
Sick. Mariko Tamaki's. And we get the Hulk.
That's right.
Issue three.
Two Mariko Tamaki's books, which is
Maximum
very exciting.
Tamaki.
We're going to get the second issue of the Commandy Challenge, which is a fun DC book that we didn't get to talk about together.
No, we didn't.
Me and Mason. No, it was a Mason episode.
Oh, well, I really enjoyed that.
Me too. And similarly, Loose Ends, number one, came out that week too. So we get the second issue of that. Motro number four, which is one of my favorite books coming out right now, comes out. And we get a new Elektra book. So I don't know about that. I reckon that'll be good.
For some reason, I think that that's going to be good. Someone told me something about it, which I've now totally forgotten, that made me go, huh. Alrighty then.
She's an octopus now.
I would be into that.
I'd be. If Elektra was suddenly an octopus.
Man.
So you can get in touch with us and would love if you did. Facebook.com/Serious Issues Podcast or join our group and talk about comics all day with a bunch of hundreds upon hundreds of comic book fans. Facebook.com/group/Serious Issues Podcast. I want to give a shout out to my boy, Travis Alexander, I believe his name is, who after listening to our episode with Mr. Sunday Movies last week, and big thanks to James and to Nacho Pop for filling in for joining us last week. But James and I were talking about westerns, and I was saying how like I just want a straight up western book, and Travis was like, you know what, I'm gonna write you that book. So he's written a script of a pretty great first 10 pages of a western comic.
And man, thanks so much for sending that through. That's huge.
That's like, there's no better thing to get sent in an
Absolutely.
Email. If you're working on an idea of things, I mean, I'm not going to offer that much criticism. I'm keen to see what our listeners are creating. So also, if you're an artist that wants a script, maybe write to us, seriousissues@kingscomics.com, and we'll put you in touch with Travis and maybe we can make this come to life.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to also send a quick shout out to Kevin from Ireland, who sent us a nice email, which was lovely, just saying how much he's enjoying the current all-new Wolverine book, which I agree, Kevin, and I sent you a response to basically saying that. But it's just like, it blows my tiny mind that there are people listening to this in Ireland. As someone who grew up being forced to do Irish dancing by their mother, that's huge for me.
You know, I've watched thousands of people scream for three women doing Irish dancing on stage like every night for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Speaking of Irish listeners, shouts to James for setting up the, he's an Irish listener. Who set up a Serious Issues group chat on Facebook too.
Yeah.
So you can join that if you would like to talk about comics literally every minute of the day. you can find me online at LevDog, LevDawg, and Siobhan is at Siobhan, SIOBHAN.
Nailed it.
CBG. I can spell it. I just think I still don't think I pronounce your name right.
I don't think I pronounce it right.
Right. Fantastic. Of course, serious_issues on Twitter and seriousissues.tumblr.com. We're everywhere, guys.
We're everywhere, guys.
We're fucking everywhere. Leave us a nice review on iTunes, especially if you're a new listener who has made their way over from finding out about us on The Weekly Planet. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much to Meso and James for their continued support.
Yeah, thanks, fellas.
We got thousands and thousands of downloads on
on the episode of Mr. Sunday Movies, and that's super cool. I think a lot of people only tuned in because I've revealed what Mr. Sunday Movies' hand looks like. No one knows what his face looks like. Isn't that crazy?
What does his face look like?
Beautiful.
It's too beautiful.
He's revealing it at the end of the at some point in March. They're doing a live thing for the announcement of their Planet Broadcasting thing, and let's just say with a wink, there's going to be some fun serious issues related news related to that too.
Nice.
Wink.
Wink.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week for another episode of Stay Serious. I fucked it up.
That was so close.
I'm so tired. I'm going to bed forever, everybody. See you next time.
Bye, guys.
Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and it's about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.